Bert Wheeler, Reel 5.
Right, we will. We travelled from India into the Arakan Chittagong. Within there was a training at Chittagong, and we went into action.
What type of training did you do at Chittagong?
Just normal jungle training, advanced training from when we were in India.
How did that differ? Was there anything?
It wasn't really much difference, it was more jungly than India Park.
And how did you travel from Chittagong to the front line?
By road transport. In convoy, I can't remember how long it took us, but it was quite a long journey. From Chittagong, we then moved up the coast. Cox's Bazaar taking the Akyab Road from Cox's Bazaar, but from there I can't remember any names, but we were bumps there. But we then went into action alongside the 7th Duke at the what was known commonly as the Tunnels.
So can you take me through what actually happened there?
Very vague actually, but I remember one occasion there was quite a battle going on, and we had rather large casualties, and I had to bring what I thought was just one back, but in the end I had 10 to take back as a stretcher bearer, and you had to pick the ones you thought were worst, who would live, and get them back as quick as you could, and bring it down eventually to the walking wounded, and that was that.
So when you were picking the people, was it a difficult choice to make sometimes?
It was very difficult. I would say, being an inexperienced, well, not doctor-wise, you had to make your own decisions, whether they be right or wrong. Everybody stood by you, what you've done.
What would you look for in a casualty to make sure they were evacuated?
A casualty, if say for instance he had caught a shell or shrapnel in his chest, maybe the heart or the lungs exposed, then you wouldn't give him much hope. People with a broken leg who can't walk, they had the more or less first priority. People with other wounds, body-wise, which are not serious, they walk with you.
So when you evacuated you had 10 casualties to evacuate.
Yes.
How did you go about that one? Did you make 10 journeys?
Yes. Not exactly 10 journeys, but the walking wounded, maybe 2-3 of them, walked with you while you were carrying the stretchers.
And
you had to keep an eye on the lot while you were on the move.
What type of wounds had the walking wounded got?
Walking wounded were, anything shrapnel-wise, not detrimental to the death, put it that way. Others, flesh wounds, put it that way. Which, even myself, I had a shrapnel in the arm, which I lost the grip. So therefore, I was just walking wounded and couldn't do anything.
So when you evacuated the wounded, where did you take them to?
Back to battalion quarters, where the MO was available, the actual dressing station. He then decided which ones to send down further down the line by ambulance.
And what kind of conditions was he working in?
Very primitive. He had to improvise where he possibly could. He should have a good operating table. He would operate on a stretcher and things like that. If you had a lot of patients, you've got blood everywhere. I won't say he'd have any amputations. I can't remember if he had actual amputations. But normal dressings, normal operations, yes.
And while you were dealing with these casualties, would you ever work at the medical post at all? Or would you be purely involved in casualty evacuation?
Now, the only time you were on the actual medical post was when you were resting. And not attached, when you were resting, you were not attached to companies. You were back to headquarter company, classed as training.
And when you were evacuating the casualties, did you ever dress wounds yourself before you evacuated into the medical post?
We always had to dress wounds before you carried them or took them back to the headquarters dressing station. If there were fractures, you had to put splits on them and bind them up the best you could. In your dressing bag, you carried dressings and splints to a point, I would say. Bigger splints were not available for carrying ones. They would be too bulky.
And did you report to the medical officer when you arrived about the condition of each casualty?
That's right. Well, not exactly the medical officer. He reported to the senior NGO who was under control of the medical officer.
And would they then prioritise those casualties that you had?
They prioritised everything which went in, whether it be a toothache or a broken leg. Say it was a toothache, well, you just waited.
And the people who'd received flesh wounds, you said they wouldn't be evacuated. Would they be treated at the post?
Yes. Treated actually in the battalion, providing there were no suspected infection. If it's a bullet wound, for instance, in the arm or anywhere, bullet wound anywhere, that would cause infection. So therefore you would then be posted down the line to the next hospital or dressing station, whatever, advanced or rear dressing station, to have further treatment, maybe surgery in a reasonable operating theatre.
Was there a problem with infection?
Yes. Quite a lot. Especially, I've seen quite a lot of gangrene, for instance, which is, well, I won't say it's fatal to if it's caught too much, but it can cause amputations.
Were the wounds cleaned in any manner?
Yeah, they clean them where possible. If it doesn't take, if the cleaning is not effective, then amputations take place.
What would they clean the wounds with?
A dressing which we used to use at the time, acrid flaming, which was one of the main cleaning agents at that time. I'm saying what it is nowadays, you know, there's so much advance I wouldn't know. But the agents then were the same, acrid flaming, and we used to dress it with a cream suitable for the for the wound. And bandage them up and hope for the best.
Would you clean them before you evacuated them? Or would you wait?
No, no. No, I'd say once they're wounded, you dress the wound and try and stop any further deterioration. And then get them back as quick as you can for a further, better identification of the wounds.
And what was the distance that you travelled between the front line and the medical post?
Could be anything from 200 yards to a couple of miles, maybe 3 miles, depending on how the companies were situated around the perimeters.
And the casualties that you evacuated at the tunnels, what was the distance there?
I think it was a reasonably short one. I can't recall too much on that one, but I think it was reasonably short, which is quite good actually, because of being the first action in the Far East, you weren't really acclimatised, and the shorter distance made it much easier for you, for your own sake.
Why was that?
Being not acclimatised, you were perspiring, short of breath. I won't say, not too much anyway, but...
Did you encounter any problems evacuating the wounded on with, the say, the terrain or the...
No, you had no problem really, unless you were way up a hill, on the hills or something like that, and then you... But the Aragon was being flat, and it wasn't a great deal of problems.
And you mentioned, were you wounded with shrapnel at that time yourself?
Not until later. I only mentioned that because I myself didn't get wounded until Carina.
So, are there any incidents that stick in your mind around this time when you were involved in the actions at the tunnels?
Not really. The only real actions were when we were relieved, went and sent over the Naga Hills into Assam, where the Burma, the Kohima situation was developing.
Can I just ask a little bit about the terrain in the Arakan? You said it was flat.
Yes.
Are there any other sort of distinguishing features with it?
Only to the... as we were approaching from Cox's Bazaar up to Akiat, you had the Naga Hills on our left. And they were a range of hills, anything... 8 to 10,000 feet, which luckily we didn't have to climb at that time. We were situated on the flat side of the. Our neighbours, if we like to call them, Seventive, they had the Naga Hills, and they were welcome to them, as far as I could see.
And what was the jungle like in comparison, say, with the jungle you trained with in India?
Reasonably, around about the same. It wasn't too dense in the Arakan, not like farther over the other side of the hills, where it was more just dense, and that was it.
So, what did it look like with it not being so dense? Would you have open areas or?
Yeah, there were open areas, sandy, That's all I can say about it. I was a, the where it was generally, it wasn't too dense. It was, you were able to walk through it without cutting your way through.
And can I just ask you a little bit more about the medical post?
Yeah.
How many people would be working there with the medical officer?
Could be two or three, depending on what the strength of the staff is. The strength of the session, I'm sorry. There was always four to accompany. If anybody went sick or wounded in the company, a medical section in the company, then it was replaced from a quarter company, which was the medical post. So therefore, the personnel at the medical post fluctuated. Sometimes you only had one. Not a time if you're full strength, you may have half a dozen.
And you said that the casualties that were more severely wounded were evacuated by ambulance.
That's right, yes.
Were the ambulances attached to your battalion, or were they...
No. They were called from
Is it the Advanced Casualty Clearing Station?
The Advanced Casualty Clearing, that's right, yes.
And how many people could you load up into an ambulance?
Two stretchers of an ambulance. Walking wounded, well, you just pile them in. if you wanted to.
And what were the unit casualties that you had in that period when with the fighting around the tunnels? Were they heavy or light?
They were reasonably light compared to others. I think we were reasonably lucky in the Alcan by getting away with so few casualties.
And what type of wounds were they? You've mentioned shrapnel. Were there many gunshot wounds?
No, it was mainly shrapnel. If it wasn't shrapnel, it was normal thickness. Malaria, dysentery, they were the two main ones.
You say shrapnel, would that have been from Japanese artillery or mortars or both?
Mortars and artillery.
How accurate were they with their mortars and artillery?
They were very accurate. Not so much long distance firing, but on open sites, they were very accurate.
And you say there was a number of other medical problems. Were you taking any precautions against malaria at that time?
Yes. Mefaprine tablets were issued on a daily basis to everybody. Irrespective of whether you wanted them or not, you had them.
When did you take them? When would you take your tablets?
You take them orally, once a day in the evenings. I think it used to be a parade after dinner and night, anyway. The parade, you had to have an officer and a medical leave. And the tablet was put into your mouth by the medical orderly, the officer there supervising.
And was it an offence not to take your?
Yes. You were to my knowledge, I didn't have anybody between. There were one or two exceptions. Whereby they caused a lot of problem with diarrhea, and if you suffered from that, you were excused mefaprine tablets, but given quinine once a week, which was not as effective as Depakote, but it was a very good substitute.
With the malaria tablets, did you have to continue to take them when you were out of the jungle conditions?
Yes, yes. Irrespective of where you were in India or Burma, you had to take the tablets.
And you mentioned that dysentery was a problem while you were in the Arakan.
Yes.
Was there anything that you could do against that?
No. If there were bad cases, you were evacuated. If there were really small cases, well, I'll say a bad case. If you were passing blood, that was classed as a bad case. It was just normal clots. Then you were treated by the doctor, not the medical officer, but by the doctor.
So was diarrhea a problem with change of environment as well? Would people suffer from diarrhea just because of the conditions that you were in as well?
Yes. I personally suffered some of that with the trots. The water was one of the main things. The water never the same 2 days running. Because you got your own water. You dug down and you had water. And that was one of the main causes, or one of the big causes, rather, as well as the prosthetic.
And you said the water. What rations were you receiving once you'd gone into the front line?
Depending where you were, if you were able to get your own supply, you probably had a bottle a day, which was, I think, the bottle was pint or pint and a quarter, etc. And that is what you were allowed.
You know, when you were saying you evacuated the wounded and you were perspiring a lot and trying to acclimatise,
yeah, yeah,
was that a problem for water with you because you were doing heavy work?
That's right, yes. But we still weren't allowed any more. Irrespective of what you were, a bottle a day was your ration for everybody.
How did you personally ration your water then? Did you have a scheme that you would use yourself?
You would not drink as a drink. Obviously, if I was thirsty now, I would have a good drink. But if I was thirsty then, you wet your lips, and that was it. The pint or the bottle of water that lasts you the 24 hours.
And would that relieve you if you just wet your lips?
Yes. Yes.
Did you find that difficult at first to yes, come to terms with?
Yes. Once you got used to it, then it was quite simple. But it took a lot of luck to get used to.
Did you use any other methods to relieve your thirst?
No. No, just... Well, you couldn't really get your thirst, really. I would say, apart from the only time you did relieve it was when you had the meal break and tea was supplied, which was you were allowed a mug of tea, a meal. So, you know, 3 mugs of tea a day, which I can't really win any more on that one.
What kind of food rations were you receiving?
Mainly tinned stuff. Well, it was all tinned stuff. Bully beef and cheese. Were the 2 main dietaries.
Was there a problem in the heat with the rations? Did the heat affect the rations that you had at all?
No, they were cooked. But we had quite a good cook, thankfully, and he used to make some very good meals out of nothing. It was quite important, was a local produced eggs, if you were lucky. You catch a few chickens, you were lucky. And do a bit of fishing. Occasionally.
Did you do fishing?
No. The fishing was mainly done by the locals, and you got the fish from the locals.
Was there much contact with the locals while you were in the Arakan?
Yes, they were quite, they were quite good. Locally, they didn't want to know the Jets, and they were very pleased to see the friendly troops back again. I won't say English because there were other nations there as well, but they were very pleased to see us back.
So were they friendly, and you could barter?
If they had it, they would barter. Their main thing they wanted was blankets. not so much armament. They weren't really interested with that. But they were interested in blankets, so to keep them warm in the winter.
So you were there, would that be late 1943?
The Arakan was...
Or early 44.
44. November 43, we went to the Arakan, and we left there again in March 44.
And during that time, what were the weather conditions were like?
Very wet. Monsoon time to start with, and then the following of that, it was the last month or so was turning, and it was hot.
Did you have any problems in the monsoon period with keeping, well, dry, or keeping your clothes dry?
If you were wet, you were wet all the time. If you did manage to keep dry, then it was up to you whether you kept dry or got wet again. But if you were wet, you remained wet all the time.
Did that cause any medical problems, wet clothing?
Not really, not short term. I think, myself, in the long term, it has caused quite a lot of problems with a lot of people. Rheumatics. I won't say what else are, I just don't know, but rheumatism, I would think. But I know it has caused quite a lot of problems with a lot of people.